Canedo.
Canedo.
Hello. Mucho gusto. Thank Hi. You for coming on to the program today.
Yeah. I can speak Spanish too. Puedo hablar español.
Yeah, we do business internationally here at the Merlin Davis College of Business.
Sure.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm so happy to have you onto the program Thank today. You. And I'm excited to hear more about your story and share with our listeners here at the college. But Can you share a bit about your journey? What inspired you to focus on HR and organizational strategy in your career? And what brings you to the College of Business today?
Oh, well, man, I'm not so young anymore, so my story is really long, but I will try to summarize.
We have plenty of time.
Yeah, so I am actually an engineer. My undergrad degree is in computer science and electronics. I got this in Mexico from a private university, El Tec de Monterrey. Mm-hmm. I honestly worked doing that kind of stuff only for a year, and then I got really interested into organizational functioning. So I moved from that field and began doing some more kind of a job in the administration side, mm-hmm. and enrolled in an MBA program. So mm-hmm. I that was my first contact with something more specific to HR, because my concentration in the HR in management in MBA was in HR. So I did an MBA in HR. I just realized, you know, organizations function because of people, because
right.
of individuals running businesses, individuals doing stuff. And I just got hooked. I couldn't resist to the idea of studying or analyzing and understanding why organizations function the way they function. With people inside organizations. So that was my first touch. I was working in HR for a number of years down in Mexico, probably like 10, 15 years. Mm. I was a manager, I was a director of HR. But there was always in me a wish, a desire to learn, to understand, it has never gone. I mean, I'm still studying, I'm still learning. We never stop learning. There's so much to learn. So I tried a PhD while working. Complicated. It's a lot. I mean, I just loved my work. It was great. I was doing so good in my work, but at the same time wanted to continue learning and studying and investigating, in particular, again, organizational functioning and people inside organizations. But it just didn't work for me. I mean, it was just too much. I was doing well in the program, in the PhD program, but I came to a point in which I was not enjoying either. Mm. I was not enjoying studying. I was not enjoying working. And so I stopped. I said, this is not what I need. This is not what I want. I want to enjoy what I do. So I stopped the PhD program and continued working. And promised to myself, the next time that I try a PhD degree, I will stop working because I want to enjoy studying. Right. I do enjoy studying. So that was it. I mean, it was a few years later, a wife and a little boy that I decided to stop working and enrolled in a PhD degree. So that's why I came to Texas. I came to the University of Texas, San Antonio. That's where I got my PhD in business with my concentration is the mix between org strategy and human resources. So that's how I came to. Went to Michigan after completing my degree. I was in Northern Michigan University for a couple of years. Too cold, man. I mean, it's just 3 inches of snow a year is just too much for me. I am not done. We are not done for that. I mean, my wife, my son. Well, my son actually liked it. He loved skiing and that kind of stuff, but we are just not made for that. And that when the opportunity came, UHD, man, sounds like home. I'm in Houston. I want to go back to Texas. So the opportunity came and I took it and I applied and here I am. And I enjoy it and I love it and I love my students in Houston and everything. It's just beautiful. This is my place, man. I'm not going anywhere.
No, we're so happy to have you. And honestly, I'm with you on that. You know, the idea of being a lifelong learner is such a ingrained concept in us. And the idea of being curious enough to always just want to investigate and further learn. I think that's something that I share with you in common mm-hmm. on that one. I appreciate that you like understood that you had those boundaries in terms of work.
Yeah.
But then you decided, I'm not going to let that stop me, and I'm going to return to it, and it's my mission to accomplish it.
Yeah, well, when it becomes a sacrifice, I mean, there's sometimes that we need to do something, that we need to sacrifice something, but when you want to enjoy what you do, I think it's really important if you have the opportunity. I understand sometimes we don't have the opportunity to choose. Sometimes we just need to do what we need to do. But whenever we have the opportunity to choose, I think we should. And if we can be whatever we enjoy, I mean, that's key. That's key.
That's what
key.
Wakes you up. That's what motivates you to wake up every morning and get out of bed do your best.
Yeah.
You're now teaching HR and you're now on this side. Part of HR is about bringing out the best in people and helping them develop them.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, why do you believe HR and organizational management are important areas of study and practice for both students and professional in today's chaotic world?
Oh, well, but yeah, world is chaotic for sure. You can identify two types of organizations, basically, for-profit, non-for-profit, right? Most organizations are for-profit. For-profit organizations to exist need to make profit. We need to understand that. The bottom line is, are you making profit? So some minimum profit. You cannot be losing money forever, right? You can invest, you can use your investment, but at some point in time, if you don't want to go on Chapter 11, you need to make profit. It is important, I think, on the research side, for example, there's usually a disconnect between, I would say, three main actors: practitioners, researchers, and within researchers, there's usually in management, not a lot. I mean, there's some connection, but not a lot of connection between people analyzing a phenomenon at the macro level and people analyzing a phenomenon at the micro level.
Right.
Macro level means industry, market, organizational level. Micro level means individual level. That's people. So usually there's a disconnect in research between macro and micro. And what I like actually is what is in between, what we call meso. That's how we connect organizational strategy to individual functioning. In particular, the question that I try to answer always in what I do is, how do we make individuals in organizations, employees, deliver the results the organization expects from them? That's what I am trying to answer always. So it is important that there's an alignment. It is important that people are motivated. It is important that people are empowered. And it is important that there's some leadership in organizations. So those factors, those four factors that I mentioned, alignment, empowerment, motivation, and leadership are key in organizational functioning at the individual level and at the macro level. So that's how I see organizational functioning, understanding again that we need to make some profit, that's for sure.
That is so fascinating because a few things stand out. One, the idea that the grass is always greener is something that we're always chasing in our next job roles.
Oh, right.
And the other thing that I've heard many times is sometimes, necessarily in terms of whenever someone takes a role, sometimes it's the culture that forces you out. There's that misalignment.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
Is that something that you see regularly whenever, you know, people take a job, but over time it might not be the right fit for them?
Yeah, well, and this became more common with newer generations. So the silent generation and the baby boomer generation, it was common that individuals got a job and they stayed there forever. I am pretty sure that you have probably a grandfather or a grandmother or probably even someone older who took a job right after of college and 40, 45 years in that job. Then that's it.
Yeah.
I'm done with my professional career. That behavior began changing with my generation, with the Generation X. And the change in the behavior was now individuals were probably not so loyal to the organization, but more loyal to the people. There was a slight change there.
Yeah.
What did this mean? This meant that now individuals probably didn't stay in the same organization forever, but they change usually when the supervisor moves. So the supervisor goes, people reporting to them move to where the supervisor went. This was a little change in behavior. People were not so loyal to the organization, but more loyal to the people, to the supervisors. And now, with the newer generation, with millennials, alphas, etc., Zers, they are loyal to themselves. It's a whole new game.
What are some ways that students can stand out among HR managers as they begin their job search? And necessarily, you know, the thing that scares a lot of students is, you know, I need 5 to 7 years of experience, but I don't necessarily have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are some, you know, practical strategies to read into those job posts and find, you know, is this a good opportunity that I'm qualified? And if not, you know, should I still go for it?
Yeah, so it is weird sometimes with organizations because it is very common that when there's a job opening, experience is required, right? But if you're out of college, just recently graduated, I mean, it is not so common that you have a lot of experience. Probably we in the College of Business are the exception because we have a lot of students who have jobs, full-time, part-time, etc., and they do have a lot of experience. So we are really, I would say, lucky in the College of Business because our classes have a mix of students with a lot of experience and some with some, I mean, not so much experience, but a little bit less of experience. So experience, of course, is going to be something that helps. So there's something interesting with job applications.
Mm-hmm.
And here, your personality plays a role, the personality of the applicant. If you know yourself and you know that you can be applying and applying and applying and your motivation is never going to go down and you are not going to feel down yourself or discourage yourself, I would say, well, if that is you, then go ahead. But usually most people, we have a threshold after which we really get discouraged.
Yes.
I mean, I can apply and I can apply again and I can apply, but if I am rejected and rejected and rejected, man, I'm gonna begin thinking that it is me. It's probably me. I am not good enough. Nobody catches me. And I get discouraged and this can become really bad. I mean, it can be a really vicious cycle and you don't wanna go there. So what do you need to do? What you need to do is read really well the job description. If you have probably not all of the qualities outlined in the job description, but most of them, or at least 50% of them, then apply. If not, my recommendation is look for another possibility. Because you're going to be rejected. And every time you are rejected, you're self-esteem comes a little bit down. And then you will find yourself at some point in time really discouraged and you will not want to apply anymore. So it's really important that you know yourself, that you know what you are good at doing, that you know if you are getting a major, that you know what skills are those that the major develops and you have them clear. And try to look for something that fits this description. In particular, in the College of Business, I would say reach out to the Career Center. Man, that's a great tool. We in the College of Business, in the Madeline Davis College of Business, we are really lucky. Our Career Center is great. They are very competent people. Brett Hovey, his director, just amazing people. They are great. They have a lot of workshops. They have resume building. They prepare you for interviewing. They even, you can even borrow attire from them to attend to interviews. They will put you ready for the interview. I mean, getting a job may be a job.
That's a challenge in itself.
It's a job. I mean, I applied. Let me tell you. After I finished my degree, my PhD degree, I applied to over 150 positions.
Right.
150. That's a lot of applications. But I got a job. And that's all I needed. Right?
Right.
So what I'm trying to tell is there's going to be a position for you. You just need to find it. But somebody will want you. The chances increase if you prepare, if you do the job, if you understand the organization, if you know the job qualifications. Those who interview will realize if you are ready or not. Mm-hmm. And again, I cannot stress this enough. Use our Career Center. Use it. Go there. They're good.
I think all of this is just so relevant because not only does this mirror my experience, but also a lot of my classmates. Mm. I hear stories of my classmates who are dedicating time to their day to send out a lot of applications, but they're not having as much success, or they're having limited success. Whereas some of my other classmates, they're taking more of a position approach, right, where they're focusing in on where they want to go in terms of industry, the types of roles that they want to sort of go into, and just finding roles that are more tailored to that. And right, they're having a little bit of a better success, you know. So everything you're saying is very timely. And, you know, the idea that the shotgun approach, you know, if you have the time, that's an opportunity there. Mm-hmm. But it comes with challenges as well. Like, you don't want to hurt your self-esteem, because right, when you get that opportunity, you have to be willing to bet on yourself, and you have to be willing to have all the confidence in the world to say, I'm here. I made it this far. I made it to the interview stage. Mm-hmm. Now it's time for me to sell myself and to convince others I am that candidate.
Yeah.
And it's really challenging. One layer to add on to it is the new technology that is part of our HR processes nowadays, applicant tracking systems.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes when you submit that resume, you might not even get that resume seen by a human,
an individual.
Why is that? You know, break it down for me. And what are some strategies to make it past these ATS systems?
That technology, it's helpful for organizations, of course, and there are several reasons why this technology came.
Break it down.
For example, think of Google, mm-hmm, right? There are engineers all over the world who want to work for Google. Mm-hmm. Just imagine the number of applications that they get from all over the world. It's millions. The rejection rate at Google, last time that I saw, was below 5%. It was like, I mean, the rejection was above 95%, meaning less than 5% make it to the next stage. They reject hundreds, thousands, millions of applications using software.
Yes.
I mean, those applications don't make it to the next stage. They are not reviewed by a person. It's the software rejecting. So that's an extreme case, right? Yes. Google, they receive millions of applications. They are more selective than any university in the U.S., Google.
Oh, wow.
I mean, like Harvard, MIT, Stanford, any university, you name it, Google is more selective in terms of percentage.
Right.
Like Google, there are many other organizations who began having a lot of applications for their jobs. Hundreds, thousands. So there was a point in which it became unsustainable for organizations. I mean, one person, two people, three people, four people, five, 10, in the recruiting stage of the process, reviewing applications. It was not just sustainable. That's why this kind of software came. Now, software does what you tell the software to do. right? It doesn't matter how much you tell me about artificial intelligence. In the end, artificial intelligence is coding. Coding. Somebody codes what AI does, right? Mm-hmm. And the machine is going to do what you tell the machine to do, right?
Right.
And if the machine learns, it is because a coder told the machine to learn. I mean, they don't think by themselves. That is not true. They learn because they are taught to learn.
Right.
That's how it works. It's code. It's lines of coding. So these softwares, what they do is this. Somebody told the software what it should look for in an application, right? And that's why in many cases, there are two different types of doing this in organizations. The lowest level, the lower level, I would say, it's an application in which you fields online, mm-hmm. but you are required to fill. You cannot submit the document, but you have to fill, right? Because what that type of software does, it searches in the fields that you serve, that you filled. There are some other that are a little bit more advanced, and they call this natural language, right? In which you can just submit a PDF with your resume, mm-hmm. and the software will look for keywords, right? That's different. It's a different type of software. So again, what is the key? What is the key to make it to the next stage? That you read the job description really well, that you identify the qualifiers, the knowledge, the skills, the abilities, the competencies that they are looking for, mm-hmm. and make sure that you say something about that somewhere in your resume, if they're looking for somebody who is a critical thinker, you say something about critical thinking in your application. If they are looking for somebody who can see the future, somebody who can envision, somebody who can put attention to detail, then in your application, you say something about that.
You better mention attention to detail and add an example.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Because the software is going to look for that. It's trying to match, right?
And I think that's the most challenging part for a lot of students, because they feel like they're getting these high rejection rates, but it might not necessarily be because they're not qualified, but because maybe they're not setting up their resume correctly.
Correct.
And having those keywords.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that little piece of the puzzle can increase your acceptance rate.
It can.
And it can help build your confidence and get you to that next stage.
Yeah. And you know, so, okay. So we do hire, right, in the College of Fitness. Mm-hmm. We hire faculty very often. It is common. So, for example, in a search that we have for a tenure track position, every time we receive more and more applications. Mm-hmm. So 5 years ago, we received for a tenure track position in the Department of Management, I don't know, 40, 45 applications. Now we are really close to 100 for each position. It has more than doubled. So we don't have a software in the College of Business for doing that screening. So we do the faculty, we do the search committees, we do the job. And something that is, I think we on the other side, the recruiters, we really want to see applications of people who somehow fit the position for which we are trying to hire. We don't like it too much when I'm looking for a professor to teach management or HR or strategy, and I receive an application of somebody who teaches philosophy or somebody who teaches ethics, because we are not looking for that. So that's not good on the recruiter side,
right?
Because we feel we are losing time. I mean, if you read, I mean, it's a PhD degree job. We expect people to be educated and being able of reading requirements. So if you, I mean, I couldn't really encourage anybody to apply to a job if you know that you clearly are not qualified for the job. I don't think that's a good idea.
And you know, that's an interesting point, because I think that it also goes back to the shotgun approach.
Yeah.
I always try to caution against the shotgun approach in terms of job searches, because I feel like you're setting yourself up for success, but it also in a way sort of dilutes your value as a candidate.
Wow.
Because the thing is, if you're in the right space, you pretty much are in the right arena to do battle.
Right.
But if you're in a different area and in a different stage trying to go to become a rocket scientist, but you know, you have an MBA, it doesn't necessarily align. You might not have the technical skills to align. Like, you're educated, but it might not be the right opportunity for you. So about finding those right opportunities and making sure that you align with the skills, the qualifications, and that your resume aligns with that. Would you say that goes a long way to making sure like you're in the right space?
Your probabilities just improve.
It's a numbers game.
They increase. They increase.
So I have to ask you something challenging. You know,
my God. I don't think I'm ready. I used to ask the questions to my students, not the other way, but okay, let's go ahead.
All right. Well, in terms of, you know, working with SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management, and making sure that the degree is aligned with industry needs, I think that's really important. You know, going back to the ethos of the college, you know, having that reality-based business education is really, I feel, at the forefront of delivering on the value proposition of getting a degree. The one thing that a lot of students worry about is, will my degree have that value proposition, and will I get my return on my investment for the time and the money spent on the degree? In terms of leveraging that, it sounds like you made that effort to connect and bridge that gap. You know, what would you say to students, you know, now that they've entered the HR major, you know, how do they maximize their chances for success?
Right. Yeah. Well, so in addition to those two that I just said, there's a there's another possibility, and it is in the curriculum. So the curriculum, I was saying, was designed in alignment with TRIM, and we made sure that it was certified by them. We have a class in the major that is not mandatory. It is not required to get the major. But I think if you want to add value to your degree, it's really a great idea that you take this class. It is a class called the TRIM certification. So this class, if you enroll in it, you're going to be prepared to take the TRIM certification test. If you get the CPE, so there are basically two certifications in the society. One is called the CPE, and the other one is called the DSP. The S stands for strategy. But the first one, the CPE, it's a good idea, because if you get that certification, if you graduate from a major that is aligned with TRIM, and in addition, you are certified by TRIM, your odds increase a lot in the labor market. We just must recognize that the Society for Human Resource Management plays a role in HR professionals' world. So having this certification, I think, is a good idea. So that would be my first recommendation. We didn't make it mandatory. We discussed a lot in the faculty. We should make this mandatory, because we really want our students to have an advantage in the labor market. We really want our students to get jobs. That's what we are here for. We want you to succeed. We decided not to include it as a mandatory course because it has a cost. So the certification test, you have to pay a fee, but not to the university, to the TRIM, to the Society for Human Resource Management. So so taking the test has a fee. So you have to pay for that. And that's the only reason we didn't include it, because we know many of our students struggle with economics, with money, and we didn't want to add this to the load. But those who can, do it. If you have the opportunity, do it.
And maybe something you can also leverage in the job hunt on the HR side for future HR professionals. Maybe this is something that they can have covered by their future employer to get that certification.
That's possible. Yeah.
So all those things are there. But what you're saying is essentially take advantage of these resources while you have them available, get connected to industry. And if you have the opportunity to leverage those certifications, get them.
Yeah.
Because then they'll just make you stand out even more whenever you're ready to make that giant leap into the
next. So, for example, you were speaking before about this software that rates applications. If it is an HR job and you are competing against somebody else and you have a trained CP certification,
it's a game changer.
You have a clear advantage. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I could continue talking to you about...
I can too, but it's meal time.
It's about that time. But, you know, I had originally something else I wanted to ask you, but I think I'm just going to throw it out the window. And I'm just going to lean on everything that you've learned. So you have all this experience in working in human resource management. You've learned and you've obviously interacted with humans over a very extended period. I know it sounds silly to say it like but... what are your key takeaways and how you've learned how people interact within organizations? And, you know, what advice would you give people to best navigate those dynamics so they have sort of that peace of mind, but also that ability to develop and grow their careers?
Yeah, well, each organization is unique in terms of their culture. First, I think we need to understand the culture. Once we get the job, right? Once we are in the company, we need to understand the culture of the organization, what the values are, what the motifs are, what the strategies are, where the organization is going. And then we want to ask ourselves if that is the kind of organization in which we want to grow. I know in some organizations, work environment is nice, agreeable, easy to go with, and in some organizations, sometimes culture is aggressive, chaotic, challenging, and with pressure, with a lot of pressure.
Right.
So depending on the culture of the organization, I would say just find out if that is a kind of culture in which you want to grow. I would say stick to yourself, be loyal to yourself. The more you deviate from who you are for fitting the organization, the more unsatisfied you're going to be. We know for research that people who are not satisfied at work quit, right? We believe, many people believe, because it is just so intuitive, that for example, satisfaction leads to performance. People who are satisfied are good at work. That is not true. People who are satisfied stay. They don't leave. But that doesn't mean they're going to be productive. You can be unsatisfied and very productive because you need the job, because you need the pay, because you want to gain advance, etc. But satisfaction, I mean, I'm not saying satisfaction is unrelated to performance. There is some relation, but it explains probably like 12% of the variance.
Right.
It's not much, right? But satisfaction is important. Why is it important? Because people who are satisfied stay. So if you think, just think about it. If you think that if you work for this company and you really like it and you want to have a career in this company, but you force yourself to fit a culture that you don't actually like, your satisfaction is going to go down. You will be unsatisfied. And over time, you will quit. So you will find yourself in the situation that you didn't want to be.
Mm.
Because by pushing yourself to fit a culture in which you don't belong, you ended up quitting because your satisfaction went down. So just be loyal to yourself. I don't know how else I can say, but being loyal to yourself is just so important.
No, I completely get where you're coming from. In a sense, take pride in who you are as a professional, sure. As an individual.
For sure.
Make sure that the job and the organization aligns with who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're not going to be satisfied.
Yeah.
And I think one of my guests that I've had in the first season, but also who's a Carport fellow here with mm-hmm. The MBA program,
mm-hmm.
Trisha Vincent, said it best,
mm-hmm.
to bet on yourself.
Oh, for sure.
And I think that just betting on yourself and knowing who you are, mm-hmm. and finding that those opportunities that align with you the best, yeah. are going to be the ones that will give you the most satisfaction.
Correct.
And that's where you're going to shine.
And that's where you're going to stay. You when you're satisfied, you are going to stay. Yeah.
And I think that's a big key.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Well, Dr. Canedo, thank you so much for coming on to the program. We're so happy
much.
To have you here today. And this was honestly really eye-opening. You changed my perspective.
I enjoyed.
And you helped me listen a little bit more.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, this has been Gator Bites, the official business podcast of the Maryland Davis College of Business. I'm your host, Miguel Gomez, and we want to remind you to take a bite out of business, and we'll see you later, Gator.